Hello there and welcome to another TVox podcast. I'm Jennifer Kirk.
And I'm Zoe Robinson.
And what's our topic today, Zoe? You know a little bit more about this.
Today we're talking about discrimination in the workplace. Because there's a lot of people around who find that they're discriminated against in some way, either during the application process, the interview process, or at work itself.
Yeah, I think probably the most common that people are at least aware of is once you're in the job. I think that's what people perceive as being the most common.
Yes, but actually, workplace discrimination can start right from the application process. And from that point, you are protected by anti-discrimination legislation.
Yeah, I think at this point it's worth noting we're talking primarily about UK-based legislation.
Thankfully, these days, it does count somewhat European-wide because the whole of Europe is based on the same anti-discrimination legislation now.
Yeah,
there will be variance between states.
Yeah, obviously when you get to North America, places like that, there are employment legislation. It's not just a free-for-all there, but you have to check what local legislation says. There is some handy information on this on the legal issues section of the TVox wiki.
Yes, the legal issues side of the wiki is very good for discrimination legislation. But also, if you are having problems or you think you're going to be having problems, it's worth looking up in your local directory for solicitors and attorneys that will work pro bono or at least give you advice for free, because there are a lot of them around.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's get back onto the topic. The recruitment process. A lot of people think, well, how would I know if I'm being discriminated against? You know, there's so many people who get a thanks but no thanks. You know, there was a wealth of candidates. You know, the usual generic...
The general better candidate excuse. It comes up with everything, but it is used an awful lot for this general discrimination. It doesn't have to be anti-trans. It could be sexuality. It could be skin colour. We still get that, unfortunately.
But how would you know? I think that's the question that people really want answered.
The best technique I would use is send in two CVs. It sounds a bit silly, but if you put in a CV under your current name and see whether that comes through, or you put one under a different name with a different gender, perhaps your old name, and put both CVs in and see which one gets a response.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you make them so they are word for word identical, just with different names, people might start to twig that some things up.
Yes, certainly will. But you can change things so that maybe you got your qualifications a year earlier on one of them or something like that.
But yeah, use a different font.
Yes, as long as they're similar in content, the effect that all that's changed is really just your gender and your name, then it's easy to see whether there's sex discrimination going on. It's the same with race discrimination. If you put in one name in a standard white British name and one application in with an Asian name, for example, and only one of those gets a call to interview, obviously the employer's discriminating.
Yeah, I knew a solicitor who actually made quite a good income out of doing just that. He had an Asian name and a British English name, and he would send off CVs for any jobs with both of them. And then as soon as they'd write back and say no thanks to one but yes to the other, he'd start work on the suing process. It sounds a bit sort of... a bit mercenary, but that's what he did.
To be honest with you, I support him all the way on that. It's unfortunate that in this day and age, a person can make a living by suing companies who discriminate, because obviously there are that many who can do it.
Okay, well, let's move on a bit now. So if you've done that, and one of the CVs gets an interview, but the other doesn't, and you think that that's because they're prejudiced against you in some way, what's the next step?
The next step is to send in what's called a discrimination questionnaire. Companies aren't obliged to complete these and return them to you, but if they fail to do so, it's used as evidence in any employment tribunal.
So if you then take them to a tribunal and they've refused to fill in a discrimination questionnaire, it's taken sort of as guilt. Basically.
The court will presume that they have something to hide, which is why they haven't responded. Because anyone who isn't discriminating can easily fill in this questionnaire and show that they're not discriminating.
Exactly. If you've got nothing to hide, why not fill it in? Okay, so that then covers the recruitment process. And I take it, just for clarity, it's a standard employment tribunal that you would take that matter up with?
All employment issues go to the employment tribunal, yes.
Right, okay.
And that's where you can get the discrimination questionnaire. I believe we have a link on the website as well in legal issues.
Right. And what about, I take it it's the same process with a discrimination questionnaire. For example, you were called to interview and then you kind of get an inkling that once you turned up, they didn't like the look of you. There was some, you know, I think it's something that maybe with...
You get a vibe, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, with trans people and also people with like visible disabilities and disfigurements, things like that.
Yes.
It's not necessarily apparent from your CV, but as soon as you turn up, you get the vibe.
Yeah.
I take it it's then the same process, discrimination questionnaire and...
And then employment tribunal if the questionnaire doesn't give a valid reason.
Fair enough. And then let's move on now. Okay, you've got a job, you're in the workplace, and this is another area which seems to come up a lot with trans people, in that if you're transitioning on a job, you started there in one gender role and then you transition on the job. But quite often that can kind of tease out other people's hostility towards being transgender. So what kind of things can people do if they think that they're subsequently getting discriminated against on the job because they've come out as trans?
Well, first of all, I would recommend that you have to give people time to adjust. It is a period of adjustment for everyone, so people might not be actually being discriminating or hostile right at the start. It may just be that they're not sure how to interact with you and it takes a bit of time to get used to it.
Yeah, I mean...
But once we've got past that stage... Sorry, what were you saying?
I'm saying, I mean, there's different degrees here. There's people just being a little bit uncomfortable, a little bit not knowing what to do. And then there's people just being downright hostile.
Yes, you can tell the hostile people straight off. Of course you can, yes.
Mm.
But if there is someone who's been hostile or it starts coming out after you've transitioned and you've been in the job a while, that actually some people are acting off towards you and it's because you're trans, not because they're not used to speaking to you, start collecting evidence.
Yeah.
If necessary, records on your phone conversations between you and this person where you can prove that they've said things they shouldn't, whether they're inappropriate actions, whether inappropriate speech or whatever. If there's any emails, keep copies of them.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And at all stages, if you are having problems, speak to your manager.
Mm.
Get a formal complaint process going, because at the employment tribunal, the first thing the tribunal will ask is, did you go through the formal complaints procedure?
Yeah, it's following due process.
Yes.
It's, you know, if you do things in the wrong order, it can be prejudicial to your claim.
It can. Even if you're perfectly legitimate in bringing the claim, if you haven't gone through the right procedure, then that causes problems.
Yeah, so people now, I can guess, are asking, what is that procedure? Where do you start? You know, you're suspecting discrimination. And it could be something as simple as, you know, especially if you transitioned on the job, you suddenly find... you're not being promoted, there's no pay rises for you. All of a sudden, you feel like this glass ceiling's been shoved in there.
Yes, the glass ceiling or inappropriate questions, inappropriate actions towards you could be anything from conversations stopping when you come in the room and people staring, inappropriate touching or whatever it is.
Or it could be if you're in a public-facing role, you suddenly find that without your consent or consultation, you're moved out of the public eye. Now, I mean, obviously some trans people might ask, say, well, you know, during a period of change, I feel more comfortable in a more private role.
That's fine. But if it's done with your consent.
Yeah, that's what I was getting to. But if it's forced upon you, then that in itself is discrimination. It's not a company's choice whether they move you. And there was a high profile case recently with a woman who lost an arm, and she applied for a summer job, and
yes,
they refused to let her work in the public facing and the shop front and made her work in the back room. And she actually won her discrimination case because it wasn't her asking to be put in the back room. It was the company going, oh, no, you've only got one arm. People don't want to see that
people,
sort of thing.
The company assumed people would feel uncomfortable. The stupid thing is, the woman that they were discriminating against was a law student.
Yeah,
always. If there's one person who's going to know about discrimination legislation? It's going to be a law student.
Yeah, but anyway, okay, let's get back on topic here. First process, you're suspecting this is going on, and you're thinking, what is the first thing I should do? I want to play this by the rules. I don't want to have any fault come back to me for not following due process. Where do I start?
First, start by speaking informally to your manager, your line manager, or whichever management person that you're most comfortable speaking to. Just have a quiet word with them and explain what's going on and why you feel there's a problem. Could be that they can have a quiet word with the person, sort it out there, and then it doesn't have to go any further.
Right. What about if your manager is the problem? Would you still have to approach them, or would you go to higher management? How would you deal with that?
If you're comfortable speaking to higher management, then informal word again. But if you're not, it's time to go for the formal letter of complaint. And that would go to your HR department.
Just to clarify, that's the same as a grievance procedure.
It is the grievance procedure.
Right. And I should note to people, there should be what they call an employee handbook or an employment handbook, which should give details for your company for the processes to follow.
The Employment Relations Act requires a company to not only have a grievance procedure, there is a statutory one, but to also make the procedure available to employees so you can read up on what you're supposed to be doing and you can follow it easily.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's a bit like, you know, you see these signs saying your statutory rights are not affected when you buy things in shops. Well, with a grievance procedure, there is like the statutory minimum.
There is.
And that procedure cannot have bits of it removed. You can have, like,
you know, extra rights added, but you can't have these statutory rights taken away. So all you have to do, you write the letter explaining what you think the problem is and send that to your HR department. That's effectively all it is. It's just a formal letter.
And what must they do with that? Well, I mean, they can't just ignore it or say, oh, well, yeah, we don't believe that's right.
They have to look into it. They have to investigate. And they have 2 weeks to reply to you about that.
And do they have to actually interview you and actually, you know, involve you?
They should invite you to a meeting. The meeting doesn't have to be within 2 weeks, but they have to respond and acknowledging your letter within 2 weeks.
So basically set a date that's in a reasonable time
scale. A reasonable time scale, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll bring you in where you can discuss it in person with the person investigating. The person you're complaining about also has the right to another interview. They can't be in the same one as you.
Yeah.
They cannot, in fact, be involved in this process at all, aside from give their story.
They can give their story, but they can't actually investigate it. And that's another thing that's worth pointing out. So, for example, what if you worked, as a hypothetical situation, at a company that maybe is so small that it only has one manager? What would be the process there?
It's the same.
The manager is the problem, where would you go if there is nobody higher than this person?
If there is nobody higher and you're not feeling comfortable speaking to this manager informally or formally to discuss the matter, there is what's called constructive dismissal, where you can resign on the grounds that they have breached what's called the employer-employee relationship. They have a duty of care toward their employees.
So if, I mean, the obvious example is a very small company. If there is nobody higher to go to, you can in effect short-circuit the system because there is nobody to investigate the claim. There's no outside, what I'm getting at is there's no outside body that would...
Yes, when there is no one who is not part of the problem to investigate the problem, or no one in a managerial or position of authority to investigate, you can bypass the system because the system won't work.
But would you still make the formal complaint, or would you just resign and claim constructive dismissal?
In ideal circumstances, I would still put in the formal complaint and then leave.
Right. Okay, well, let's get back to the wider workplace. You've gone through that, and it will either find that, yes, something has gone on. And, you know, if it finds that, yes, you were right, what should they be doing?
They will put a system in place to sort the problem out.
Basically stop it from happening again and address the issue.
Yes, they'll address the issue. They might send the person on a training course, or if it's sufficiently serious, they'll discipline the person who caused the problem.
Okay, and then if it comes back and they go, oh, no, everything's hunky-dory.
You have a right to appeal. again, it's another letter stating that you don't believe the process was correct and you wish to appeal.
And that has to be investigated by somebody else. That can't
that
then
has to
be...
go to someone higher, someone who can investigate not only the problem, but the person who investigated the problem.
Right, yeah. So it is, in effect, another independent look at it all. And then if that appeal, I mean, I know it's, unfortunately, it does happen where you get a whole succession of people who just, you know, they rally around. It's, you know, it becomes like the old school tie network, I sometimes call it, where everybody within the company rallies around each other to protect each other's backs.
Unfortunately, there is it's almost an innate reaction in humans to rally around and band together when someone calls them out on something. So chances are, they will say, oh no, there was no problem, and the appeal will be whitewashed as well. If it is, mm-hmm. most grievance procedures say there is no right to further appeal.
That's not true.
It's not true.
Actually, I mean, that's an interesting point. Is the grievance procedure supposed to state you can take it to the employment tribunal if you're not satisfied?
Yes,
so
it is.
If it says there is no further right to appeal, does that put the grievance procedure at fault?
Yes, that is a problem with the grievance procedure that will work in your favour at the employment tribunal.
So basically the employment tribunal will take that as evidence of institutional problems with the grievances.
Yes, it's almost as if the company is saying, we've said this because we don't want to be found out.
Yeah, it's worth saying that once you've gone there, if you wish to then take it further, you then take it to the employment tribunal, which is an independent body. It's something outside of any company. And the process is something, if you are a member of a trade union, obviously before this point it's worth getting your trade union involved, but the actual employment tribunal, you can put that in yourself. Your company won't automatically refer it, and I think that's something worth bearing in mind. If they chuck out your appeal and go, no, everything's fine, the onus is on you to take it further. It won't automatically happen.
Yes, it doesn't automatically happen because the employment tribunal is part of the court service rather mm-hmm. than part of the company or any company body. So you can go to the website or go to your local court and get what's called an ET1 form. It's the Employment Tribunal 1 form.
Mm-hmm.
This starts the ball rolling in terms of the tribunal process. It allows you to state briefly what the problem is and what you've done.
Mm.
And then they'll take that in, they'll process it, and the entirety of the tribunal service is designed to allow an ordinary person to get justice without relying on solicitors. You don't need a solicitor.
Yeah, I think that is worth pointing out that, you know, everything that you've seen on TV about courts is not how this works. You know, it's not people in silly wigs. It's a bunch of people sat around a table. It feels a lot more informal. It's a lot more accessible. And it's not, you know, it's not like watching Kavanaugh QC or anything like that.
Yes, the tribunal is pretty much the exact opposite in look and feel of the High Court. It's very informal. It's designed to help you every step of the way.
Yeah, come to the tribunal. We've got tea and biscuits.
Pretty much, only without the tea and biscuits.
Oh, I don't know. But then, obviously, that's an independent process. And I know a lot of people are daunted by the idea of court. Courts and the legal system aren't necessarily daunting. I know that a lot of solicitors and barristers maybe perpetuate this notion that, oh, you need expensive people to help you. That's not the case.
In a tribunal, you don't. Certain things, if you've been accused of a crime, then definitely get a solicitor because they will be able to sort the entire process out for you. But the tribunal, the person who runs the tribunal or runs your case, is there to help you.
Mm.
They will tell you what you need to do and lead you through it.
Yeah, and there's nobody there to catch you out or put you on the spot and try and make you look foolish. It simply is establishing the facts. And it's also worth pointing out, this is a civil procedure, not a criminal procedure.
Yes, the civil procedure is a lot more lenient. In order to win your case in a civil procedure, you don't have to prove anything beyond all reasonable doubt. It's what's called a balance of probabilities. If there's more than a 50% chance that what you're saying is correct, you win.
Yeah. So obviously the onus on evidence is not as strict. You know, you don't have to have fingerprints on the letter and stuff like that.
Yeah, so you still need evidence, of course, and which is why I was saying collect emails, keep the recordings, anything you've got.
And interesting enough, it's at this point, for example, if you were to resign and claim constructive dismissal, which I presume at the point that if the appeal whitewashes things, you at that point you can resign, claim constructive dismissal
and put in the 81 form into the tribunal.
Yeah.
Because, let's face it, if the company is just going to keep discriminating and saying, oh, no, there's no problem, would you want to stay there? That, to me, is a massive breach of their duty of care.
Yeah, the thing I would say is, before you, in effect, resign and claim constructive dismissal, get all your emails, download them to something like a memory stick, even a floppy disk or a CD. Don't leave without taking the evidence with you.
Definitely, because take it with you.
Because remember, it's not what you say, it's what you can prove.
It's always what you can prove.
So, obviously, I mean, you went through, Zoe, a huge spat with a former employer. And one of the things that really helped was the fact that on the day that they illegally fired you, you downloaded all of your emails onto a memory stick, and you had everything available. Because remember, your company may not be quite so clinical about keeping everything. If they want to erase your email account after you've left, they will do. And
most companies will, in fact, as part of the dismissal process, just delete your account.
Mm-hmm.
Because it saves them server space for a start. So what I did, I knew they were trying to get rid of me. So from the day that they started disciplinary proceedings for no reason, I started keeping all of my emails. I kept everything about the process in a separate folder on my copy of Outlook, and printed them out regularly so that I had copies. And then the day that they dismissed me, I went to my desk, copied all my emails onto a memory stick, tied up my desk and left, and put in the employment tribunal that night.
Yeah, and that manager seemed a bit peeved when you did that, because he wasn't very techno-savvy. And
he didn't expect me to do that. He expected me to turn up complaining at the tribunal with no evidence whatsoever.
Well, to be honest, I think a lot of these managers, a lot of the people who are the bullies, the bottom line here is that discrimination is just another form of bullying. They don't expect you to fight back a lot of the time.
Yeah, so if you do this, you put them on the back pedal.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there is a lot of ignorance in the area of, amongst other things, employment legislation. People don't know their rights and what should and shouldn't happen. So a lot of managers will rely on this. You know, not all, but there are, unfortunately, a fair few who will assume that they can just do whatever they want and get away with it.
I think, unfortunately, we'll have to wrap this up in a moment, but unfortunately, the fact that people don't know the rights goes both ways. A lot of managers don't realise that what they're doing isn't allowed.
Yeah, and one of the other popular ways of discriminating against people is spurious disciplinary procedures. I know you touched on that's what happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
Another form of discrimination can be being disciplined for things that you really shouldn't be disciplined. And it could just be, a company trying a very long-winded way of getting rid of you. Because, obviously, if a company wishes to fire an employee, they have to go about it in a certain way.
There is a formal process.
Mm. But anyway, we're going to wrap that up. This is me, Jenny Kirk.
And me, Zoe Robinson.
And we've been talking on the TVOX podcast about discrimination in the workplace and what you can do about it.
Yes, you can always find more information at www.t-vox.org.